You're dependable, Marty. That's what I like about you.
Within a mile of Marty's car, there were a dozen people who would have disagreed with her judgment. Some would have been happy to put their opinion in a notarized statement, signed in blood if necessary. But they weren't in the car, so they didn't get a vote.
I try.
Unlike some people, there are some people you can't depend on at all.
That would refer to Colin, I guess. Your fiancé?
Ex-fiancé.
Colin brought Alice down from Toronto for a long romantic weekend. However, Colin discovered that one of the casinos in Atlantic City was hosting a giant exhibit of baseball memorabilia with some legendary all-stars on hand. So he disappeared for the weekend, and Alice became the legendary woman scorned.
I never want to see that little swine again. My, there are a lot of casinos on this road, aren't there?
Pacific Avenue is the main drag in Atlantic City. Half the casinos are here.
That's the Atlantic Ocean south of us, isn't it? I left Canada, but I didn't change coasts.
Right. Atlantic Avenue is one street north of us. I don't know what genius named this one Pacific.
Atlantic Pacific Boardwalk. These streets are all on the Monopoly board, aren't they?
All right, again. The game was invented about a block from here.
Oh, all those little green houses. I guess I could buy a real one now, couldn't I?
I guess you could make an impressive down payment on one. The reason I was driving Alice around, I got a call from Tom Juarez, head of security at Rose Casino. He called me just as I was settling down with the racing page, trying to figure out why the horses I bet on all seem to suffer mid-race crises.
Marty, we have a poster child. Can you come over?
Sure, Tom. It's like a furnace out there, but the paying customer is always right.
That Mr. Juarez is so nice. You'd think the casino would be so mad that I won so much money, but he hired you to protect me, and he gave me a free room.
No, casinos don't mind big winners, unless they cheat, that is. Casinos live on odds. If the odds are 1,000,000 to 1 against someone like you having a lucky streak, then 1,000,000 people pass through your floor every year.
Then someone is going to win. I see.
Did they take your picture?
Yes, at the craps table.
Uh-huh. Next time they do a full-page ad, your face will be there.
Mm-hmm.
The text will say, Alice D. of Toronto won umpteen million thousand at the Rose Casino. And a lot of people will see this ad, and they will say, if she can do it, so can I.
Oh, Marty.
Of course, you will become what they call a poster child.
I hadn't thought about that. What about the guard in the free room?
Well, let's face it. If you were mugged, it'd be bad publicity. As for comping a room, well, if you feel like gambling after you wake up, well, they may get some of their money back.
And I thought he was being nice.
In Atlantic City, that is nice.
There's my room. 27A.
27A?
Just 27. My Canadian accent fooled you. The Great Northern, eh? Why aren't we going in?
I'm supposed to be protecting you. Is there any chance that Colin is in there?
Not likely. When do the baseball players leave?
Well, not for another hour.
He'll be out until then, getting autographs. I wouldn't mind so much if it was hockey. At least that's Canadian. It's like an oven out here. I suppose you're used to it. If you're from Ontario, New Jersey is like the deep south when it's October.
Well, this is unseasonably hot. The beach season is supposed to be over. Wow. Has this room been tossed?
No. I started unpacking to separate my stuff from Collins. I don't want to give him an excuse to come looking for me. I'm making a list of things I'll need, Marty. You can go buy them for me while I repack.
I'm not supposed to leave you.
Sweet, dependable Marty Crow. A girl can always count on you, can't she?
I'm your bodyguard.
The fact is, I need to write a note to that man, telling him while he'll never see me again. Frankly, I'd prefer if you weren't here while I do it. Go buy the things I need, Marty. I'll make it up to you later.
I've had a lot of women tell me to leave. I've had a few flirt with me. Alice was the first to do both at the same time. Eventually, I took the shopping list, first making her swear not to let anyone in, and to call the cops if anything suspicious happened. I promised I'd be back in an hour. Dependable Marty Crow.
The Midnight Mystery Players are bringing you a new series by Robert Lopresti, Marty Crow, Private Eye. This episode, the first in our series, is entitled Crow's Avenue. Marty Crow has been assigned to bodyguard what Atlantic City casino operators call a poster child. In this case, a young woman from Toronto who wanted big and who will be used in magazine ads for the Rose Casino. Marty has reluctantly left Alice for an hour to go purchase various things a woman on the road might need.
I got into the car out of the sauna and cranked up the grouchy air conditioning. I drove back to Pacific Avenue. The traffic never stops in Atlantic City, not even in the middle of the night. There was a Quickie Mart to the left and a supermarket a half a mile down to the right. I chose the left because it was closer. And that's how easily things happen. You turn left instead of right, and lives are changed. There were only two cars in the lot of the convenience store. Bad orchestra music buzzed woozily over the PA system as the manager was scraping hot dogs left too long on the rollers. Hair gel, bobby pins, nail clippers. These are some things people cannot live without. Huh. What's with that guy? How can he stand a heavy jacket in this weather? I thought about Alice. Before I left, her flirting had become obvious, making it clear that she wanted me to stay in her room at the casino for more reasons than just protection. It probably wasn't my devastating charm. More likely a reaction to a breakup with Colin. Well, what ethical choices did I have? She wasn't really a client. The casino was footing the bill. So why shouldn't we share some comfort on a hot night?
Is that all, mister?
Huh? Oh, yeah, that's all. Credit card okay?
Sure. Hot night, isn't it?
Yeah. Hot.
Here's your card and receipt.
Thanks. I walked to my car and dumped the stuff in the back seat. But I discovered that the manager had only given me the receipt, not the credit card. I started walking back to the store when I heard a shot. I pulled my own piece out of my shoulder holster and moved to the big front windows. My credit card was inside in the store, and I couldn't dial 911 on my cell phone because, well, the phone company and I were having a little disagreement about billing terms. When I reached the doorway, I saw a sight that would forever stay with me. A teenager was lying face down on the floor, jerking and twitching. The manager, pistol in hand, whirled around when he heard me and pointed the gun at me.
Hey! Peace! I heard the shots! Do you need any help?
Who are you?
I'm a private detective. Just happened to be passing the by. What happened? Was it a robbery?
Yeah, the punk pulled a gun on me.
Okay if I come in?
Sure, never mind. Come on in. I think he's dead.
You better call 911.
Yeah, keep an eye on things.
He was looking down at the robber. He went back behind the counter to make the phone call. There was a gun lying on the robber's far side. The kind the newspapers call a Saturday night special.
Cops are coming.
Good, I have to make a call. I have to tell a client I'll be delayed.
Mitch! Oh my God, Mitch! You killed him, you crazy man! What'd you do that for?
You!
Huh?
Put your hands behind your head.
What?
Do it!
Oh, okay, okay. Oh, Mitch!
I made the kid kneel down and patted him down for weapons. He broke down, which was no surprise. I've seen hard men break down when their friends die.
I'm going to stick pencil in rubber's gun and put it on counter. I hear sirens.
Oh, Mitch! Mitch, what did they do to you?
Now, who are you again, and what were you doing when all this went down?
Marty Crow, private detective. I'm on assignment from the Rose Casino. I was here to buy personal items for the lady I'm guarding.
We're going to need to check that piece of yours, and we need your driver's license.
Patrolman over there already took him. Look, I need to phone the lady I'm bodyguarding to tell her I'll be a one.
Use the payphone.
That motel's busy. I'll try the casino. Tom Juarez? Okay, he's off duty, I know. Do you know about Alice? Huh? No, you don't, huh? No. Well, I don't know who to... Hello? Hello?
Let's go over this one more time, Crow.
Not until I make another phone call.
Your lawyer?
For what? I didn't do anything. My gun was never fired.
Kid could sue you for pointing a gun at him. Reckless endangerment, false imprisonment, maybe.
Are you going to school at night?
Let's stick to the point. Mr. Crow, you are a licensed private investigator. That means you're a trained observer, right?
I try.
So where was Mitch Wainwright?
Huh?
The dead man. Where was his gun when you first looked in the door?
I didn't see it.
Bingo. You see, Shellcross?
Doesn't prove anything.
Listen, don't you think I could be more help if I knew what was going on here? Well, let's start with the obvious. The manager shot Wainwright. He says it was robbery, right?
Right.
So what's the problem? Is there some sort of hang-up so we can't all go back home by now? Some glitch with a statement?
No.
Yes.
Great. That clears things right up.
There's nothing wrong with Packer's story.
Huh?
That's the manager's name, Alexander Packer.
No.
But Detective Anquist wonders why you didn't see the gun when you first looked in.
I couldn't have, because it was on the far side of the body.
Yeah, you told us that.
What, you think the manager was lying? That it wasn't a robbery?
I'm not willing to close the file, is what I'm saying. Parts of this stink.
So where did the gun come from if it wasn't a lie, a robbery?
Where did it come from if it was? You think he carried it on the plane?
Hold it. You lost me again. The dead teenager just got off a plane?
According to Lamont Nelson, the kid you drew down on, he said Wainwright was his cousin from Seattle. Just flew into Philly last night for a family wedding. It was his first time on this coast, so Lamont took him to see the casinos.
So did he bring the gun on the plane? It's a good question.
Lamont Nelson? The cousin. He gave it to him. He didn't just get off a plane.
So why the robbery? Since when is that how you welcome a cousin to the East Coast? Take him out at night, hand him a gun, and tell him to rob a convenience store?
I wouldn't do it. But I don't have a record like Lamont Nelson.
Armed robbery?
Joyriding in a car somebody else stole, drunk and disorderly. A screw-up, sure, but he's never been caught in possession of a gun, much less doing armed robbery, for God's sake.
Does Wainwright have a record back in Seattle?
I got a call in on that.
You think the manager panicked alone that night with a punk teenager?
The manager's been robbed twice in the last 3 years. He bought his gun after the second one. Maybe he had himself so psyched up to use it he just assumed it was a robbery. That's been known to happen.
Or maybe it really was one. If it wasn't, why'd you think this... Where'd the second gun come from?
Maybe a throwdown. Some cops have been known to carry a second gun or even a knife just in case they shoot a guy and find out he didn't have a weapon.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Not Atlantic City cops.
Oh, heaven forbid. I take it fingerprints don't help.
Wainwright's prints are on the gun, but if Packer put the gun down by the body, he had time to set that up. No prints on the ammo.
What does the manager say happened?
Packer says just that after you left the store the first time, Wainwright came up to the counter with a pack of cola and a bag of chips. Packer bent down to get a paper bag, and when he looked up, Wainwright had a gun in his hand.
Yeah?
And he said, "Give me all the money in the register. Put it in the bag with a soda and chips." Packer pulled his gun and told him the kid to leave. He thought Wainwright was going to fire, so he beat him to it. It could have happened like that.
If Wainwright had a gun, if...
Wait a minute. There's something wrong with this story.
Yeah, what?
I couldn't put my finger on it right away. Why didn't I just let it go? I needed to get back to Alice before her boyfriend from Toronto got tired of chasing baseball players. Toronto. Well, that was it. My Canadian accent, eh? Well, I looked at the six-pack of Coke and the potato chips still sitting on the counter. The answer had been there all night long, waiting for me. Was that a quote? I mean, the manager claims that what you just told me is what Wainwright said to him?
Supposed to be. So?
So it never happened. At least, not like that.
You mean Wainwright didn't have a gun?
For all I know, he had a Sherman tank and a flamethrower. But he never said what you told me he said.
Why not?
Because Wainwright is from Seattle, Washington. That means he never asked the manager to put the soda in the back.
Why not? They don't drink soda in Seattle?
That's right. They don't.
Come on, oh, Crow. You're not going to tell us a coffee story.
No, not that. I spent a week last year in Washington State looking for a casino executive.
Embezzler?
No, one of the Indian tribes was setting up a big casino north of Seattle. They invited him as a consultant, but no one at home heard from him after that.
Did you find him?
Yeah, he had gone native, so to speak. He built himself a hut or something and was living in the dirt. He was preaching to the Indians, telling them to reject the white man's filthy gambling habit. The tribe was thrilled when I showed up. They'd been looking for someone to collect him. One guy told me, "You fellas spent 200 years trying to make us be white? Now you want to tell us how to be Indian?"
That's all very fascinating, but what does this have to do with our dead man in Atlantic City?
Just this. I found out in Washington State they don't drink soda, they drink pop.
You mean soda pop?
Right. The thing is, we call it soda, they call it pop.
Uh-huh.
Plus, a lot of people call a paper bag a sack. Also, scrap paper they call...
What does scrap paper have to do with it?
Well, nothing. I just thought it was interesting.
Wrong. You're saying this guy Wainwright, if he was from Seattle, wouldn't have told the manager to put the soda in a bag. He would have said put the pop in a sack?
Exactly.
That's awful thin stuff to make a case with. Are we supposed to take your word for that?
Call Princeton if you like. There must have someone in the language department who knows about regional English.
Well, I can buy it. I know Packer was lying. Thanks a lot, Crow.
My pleasure, Detective. Now, I'll just be going.
Not till we call the university. We may need to talk to them.
Look, can I call my client again?
Sure. Be my guest. Use that phone on the counter.
Hello?
Yes, thank goodness I got through. I need to talk to Alice. Oh, is that you, Tom? What happened?
I just drove a guy over from the casino to check her out of there. Says he's her fiancé, Colin or something like that.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I think so. She was hanging all over him. Said they were going back to Canada to get married. Today.
Well, I guess Colin didn't look so bad after I stood her up.
Oh, yeah, about that, Crow?
Yes?
She left a message for you. It says, "You slimy, awful..." I don't think I can read this over the phone.
Yeah, you're probably right. Ah, Pacific Avenue. Crow's Avenue greets the dawn.
Crow's Avenue, the first in a new series by the Midnight Mystery Players called Marty Crow, Private Eye, was written by Robert Lopresti,
Brian Watson,
starred as Marty,
Gina Bacon,
was Alice,
Rami McLean,
was Shell Cross,
Leon Charbonneau,
played Anquist and Packer,
Wayne Mullen,
Tom Juarez. Music cues were composed by David Shire. Sound cues were engineered by Tim Kraft and George Koss. Crow's Avenue was directed by Scott D. Silver and produced by Stanley Clausen. The program has come to you from KMRE-LP FM 102.3, the voice of the American Museum of Radio and Electricity in beautiful Bellingham, Washington. I'm your host, Dennis Cottrell.